everybody, and welcome back to the Vsauce VR podcast, the podcast behind the science and design of virtual reality. I am your host, Oz Balabanian, and with me today is special guest, Lee Vermeulen, who is the lead developer of Modbox VR. Hello, Lee.
Hello.
And beaming in from Germany, we have Mr. Peter Luckoff.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
So today, this is going to be a fun and experimental kind of conversation about what is the future of creative and mixed reality and combining tracking systems with pass-through cameras and what does it mean to have like physics-based sandboxes? And Lee, I guess let's give us a little bit of an introduction to yourself, a little bit of your background, and maybe tell us how you found yourself in this kind of realm of virtual reality.
Yeah, well, I started Alien Trap Games, what we call the game company we have, like 2002 with a game project called Nexius, which is this free first-person shooter for Linux, Mac, that came out. And from that got pretty successful, but it was a free game. And then so I partnered up with a bunch of people online. And then around 2011, I partnered up with a friend of mine called Jesse, and we kind of made it into an official company. And we worked on our first commercial project called Capsized, which was released on Steam in 2011. Back when you released the game on Steam, there was only like two games that released that day. So it was a very, very different time to release the game on Steam. And then we primarily did...
Much harder for indies, right?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, when there's only two games releasing on Steam, we were on the front page for like a week. That'd be very hard to do now. But we released a few other 2D games and some 3D. One of their games was called Apotheon, released in 2015. And then around 2016, I think it was, Valve started giving out headsets to Steam developers. I got the HTC Vive, and then I immediately started working on Modbox because I think I tried the Vive for the first time at PAX that year, 2016 or 2015. And then I had the idea for Modbox after trying Tiltbrush specifically. And when I got the Vive, I just like spent a month doing nothing but working on Modbox. Then we posted the first trailer. Trailer got a lot of good responses. And then now after that, we had to make it into an actual product. So we released Modbox the same time as the Vive, and we've been working on it ever since. We have a lot of different projects as a company. My obsession is and probably always will be Modbox. I spend like 80%, I'd say 70% of my time on Modbox and 30% of my time trying to run the company besides that. So we're working on a few PS4 titles and some more Steam titles and Modbox.
What was your motivation behind Modbox? Like what made you make specifically this very unique application in a sense?
And what is it actually? How would you describe it?
Well, it started with the idea that we had a previous building game called Autocraft, I don't think it's that good of a game, especially not worthwhile trying out anymore. But like Autocraft is a little bit like Besiege, where you set up these blocks together and you build stuff with these blocks in sort of a grid-like style. And the reason why that grid-like style works for Autocraft is because on a 2D game, you really need that discrete placement. You don't have that sense of depth that you have in VR and that control. So once I tried the Vive for the first time at PAX, and I tried Tiltbrush and the interface, I realized that you could really have a building game that didn't need discrete blocks. You could have a building game that you could have complete freedom because you really had that sense of depth and 3D awareness that you didn't have in previous building games. Like the reason why Minecraft is so good to build in and is because it's so easy to build the 2D grid, I mean the 3D grid on a flat screen because it's all discrete and you don't need to deal with a sense of depth. But with Modbox, I really wanted a building game where you could build things at like complete freedom and not be constrained to a grid. And so the key thing that I figured out the way to do that is as soon as things are touching, they're seen as connected. So you can start to build physics structures and sort of, you know, with complex joints and things like that, just based on if they're touching in the edit mode. So at first, Modbox, the plan was it was specifically just to make a sandbox game, sandbox physics, you know, just connect a bunch of things together, make Rube Goldberg-like machines. And so I really enjoyed that. And when we released Modbox, it was that. It was just like a Rube Goldberg making thing. And as fun as that is to do, and as fun as that is to make for, you know, YouTube videos showing your creations, I don't think that's what everyone wants to really do, fake Rube Goldberg-like machines. So what Modbox was definitely changed a lot after release. It started out as just a physics sandbox game, but now I see it as sort of a collaborative game development tool that you can both VR and desktop, where you can create games, create experiences, set up logic for them, very drag and drop, and then play games, kind of putting together editing and creating games at the same time, I guess. It's kind of like the way I describe it now, what Modbox is a little bit like Unity. It's basically Unity for beginners, but it's connected always online, and you can edit everything with other people, kind of like a Google Docs Unity sort of thing, and but with a heavy focus on VR creation and desktop creation now.
I actually have a UX question. In a sense, what you described is kind of a similar approach when you would compare something like this programming language for kids that Apple has compared to, like, you know, the real programming language. So you abstracted a lot of complexity that you see in Unity from the perspective of, like, you have some kind of game engine builder, right? But it's like very intuitive because you place everything in VR and you can interact with it. But I was browsing through your Twitter page and I before the podcast, and I was seeing that you have also some kind of debugging tools in it. So it seems like you started more from let's make it super easy, and it slowly converges towards, yeah, but actually people need more complex stuff, more complex stuff. And how do you see the tool develop future on? Because are you afraid of losing the simplicity by putting more and more features in it?
Well, yeah, that's definitely a concern. When we started Modbox, when I started on Modbox, like the scripting, it was very sort of the usual way that games do scripting, which is this visual scripting system, kind of like, you know, Redstone in Minecraft, where you're connecting things together and you're adding gates and things like that, and kind of blueprint inspired, like in Unreal. And that worked okay for the beginning of Modbox, but now that we get into what you're scripting on the latest version of Modbox, the unreleased version that we've been working on for a while, now that you're getting to scripting sort of advanced AI of people, you can't have 100 nodes that you're connecting, and it just becomes a mess. And actually, 3D doesn't, I don't find, really helps with those connections. Like, it's great to set up in 3D how things spatially connect, but setting up the logic between nodes, say a bunch of like AND gates and such, 3D just makes it worse because it actually even just makes it harder to parse. So we've changed our focus in terms of how people script in the game to be more like how programming is normally actually done, which is like a blocky or scratch approach where you have these blocks that you connect in like a logical order, I guess. I think we're making it more complex. We're adding a lot more options of what you can do with the latest scripting, but I hope that it'll be just as easy for non-programmers to pick up. And based on the beta testing we've done among our beta testers, it does seem that way, that a lot of, because our audience that we found for Modbox is people who are really interested in game development, but just aren't able to pick up Unity and start doing their ideas. Because we've noticed that they love playing around with it, but the actual syntax of programming language is what really stops them. Like the dealing with commas and dealing with how to properly do everything. So it's not that a visual node-based thing is needed. I just think something that handles the syntax for them in a very drag-and-drop interface will really help with that. So that's what I'm hoping we can accomplish. But
But how do you get the feedback
we'll
from the beta testers?
Right now we have a Discord with Modbox players, and the community is pretty small, but it's about as big as I actually want it to be right now, of like the hardcore community. But it's a really great game community that we have, because we have a lot of games. So I've dealt with a lot of different types of game communities, and some can be they're different depending on the type of game. But Modbox seems to attract the best audience of these people really interested in game development, really interested in how Modbox is shaped, and really understanding of development problems. And they've been able to just try the latest versions of Modbox and give us feedback on it, and show us what they're working on. And yeah, it's been incredibly helpful.
Nice.
That's an interesting comment in terms of the scale of a community being where you want it to be, and not growth not being the main metric to pursue. And it's actually something that we also subscribe to. At least when we're talking about our Discord community and the conversations we have in there, when you go into a Discord with, you know, thousands of people, that's such a different world than being in a community with just 100 or maybe 200 people. And Slack has the same problem, right? Where as soon as things start to scale, the engagement drops off and people just can't keep up with the amount of messages that are coming through. So I think, yeah, that's, we're in this like interesting happy medium where there are a good amount of VR, like VR and AR enthusiasts and people that have the headsets and are, I guess, engaging enough that they want to work with developers back and forth on trying these things. Is that kind of what you've seen?
Yeah, well, with Modbox, I do intend for it to scale up. Like, I do hope the community, when we do make our next releases, I do plan on sort of actually focusing on marketing it again and scaling up the community and figuring out a good way to do that, which is like community moderation and everything like that. But at the moment, with the current version of Modbox, I am pretty happy with its size. And that the thing with Modbox too is that you're working on, you're creating all this content with a tool that is heavily changing. And then so I wouldn't want there to be explosion of content at this time until we get their tools a little bit more refined. Because otherwise there'd be a lot that would be breaking and there'd be a lot more backwards compatibility to deal with.
And you guys were a launch title on the Vive, correct?
Yeah, we were on in April of 2016, I guess. Yeah.
Nice.
I think one of the OGs. Yeah, I think we could have waited with Modbox a little bit longer, and because the initial impression of Modbox, I think, wasn't the best representation of the game, and I think we could have. We were working on a few other arcadey VR titles at the time that we could have got out instead of focusing on Modbox, that I think might have been better for us. But I'm pretty happy with the way the development happened with it. It was always a very, from the beginning, a very long term project. So.
To be fair, like Gary's Mod is so big still, and it has been for years, right? Maybe 10 years, 15 years, probably over more than that. And you would imagine Gary's Mod in VR would be, or the equivalent to that would be also super popular. But I guess for Gary's Mod, like for the 99% of people that own it, maybe 1% of them make anything that ever either ends up in other people's hands or a video of it goes viral. So that scale, you need large numbers for people to actually make things that are
scale. Economics of scale.
Yeah, the initial version of Modbox, while it is very, like, it has the sandbox nature of Gary's Mod, it really didn't have the features that were needed, like multiplayer. I mean, specifically multiplayer. It was only like 8 months after release that we actually get a first version of multiplayer in, and that was just play mode multiplayer. And we really changed what we wanted Modbox to be since then, and because of that, we've completely rewrote the game. Uh-huh. So I do hope with the latest version of Modbox that we're putting together that it will have a sort of Gary's Mod type thing where we have a large amount of people that are playing it just to check out the creations, and then, you know, maybe 20% of people that are going into making their own stuff.
Let's call it Modbox 2.
Well, yeah, I don't know how we're gonna sort of rebrand it, but it is like have been working a long time on. I don't know what we're gonna do in terms of promotion and such. There are a lot of hats already, but I guess we could always add more hats.
Oh, nice. And I guess another point we should probably touch on is, and you mentioned it earlier, is the fact that you have a desktop 2D version as well as the VR version, and they're both, you're working on the same world, on the same game, and maybe you can talk a little bit about, first of all, why that decision came along, and I'm sure what are the things that you learned from that that work better on doing simple tasks perhaps on PC and then doing things in VR.
Well, there's a number of reasons though. Like part of the reason why we started making the desktop editor was that there's a lot of things that are better to do in desktop than in VR right now. I mean, maybe that'll change as VR tools get better, but at the moment, something like setting up scripting on a 2D plane or entering a lot of text or going through an options menu is a lot better on a desktop window. I don't really like some games where you pull a cat's tail or something to change the volume settings. That's not really what. So we started going down that route with the desktop editor, but it also is just that there's a wider audience, and we really want Modbox to be very configurable to like every situation. So like, you could be playing. One person could be on your desktop while you're in VR, and you could both be playing together. There could be four people on gamepad controllers, and you're in VR, and you're playing a local multiplayer game. Or you're editing. One person's editing in on the VR, another person's editing on the desktop, connected to another person online, where you also have the same setup with like four players. We're just trying to make it so it's configurable for everything from the start. And we also just want to expand beyond the VR audience. We want, like, I think VR will still be the important core of Modbox, but as a VR player, I want to be able to play with desktop players, and I want to have a very similar experience as much as possible. So we're trying to make Modbox games and the way that Modbox is structured work for desktop players also.
And I think to that point, having desktop players be not only like inspired by seeing VR players in their own game and be inspired to actually get a headset, similar to what we've seen with VR chat.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
Conversions from 2D, from desktop players into buying a headset and then being in VR because they have more control.
Like, ideally, you should be able to play, say, Capture the Flag with a VR player and then just notice that they're able to do things with their animations and their control things differently than you can. And be inspired to check out VR for that reason.
It's like a premium. It's like almost like a buying into a premium membership within a game, or like wearing a special hat. But it's like, oh, you know, that avatar has way more movement and can express better things than I can.
But it's also about having, let's say, multiple people in a room, which you mentioned. That is like the key feature to making adoption of this technology, not to be, you know, the lonely person sitting in a headset, but actually, you know, invite your friends over and start coding with them, or, you know, start playing around with them where one has the headset on and other people can interact. Like, I think it's a huge factor for adoption of technology when you are not forced to, you know, use it alone.
Yeah, I mean, that's feedback we got from a lot of Modbox players, was that they have a lot of friends that don't have VR hardware. And I mean, I don't, like, a lot of my Steam friends do not have VR, and some do and aren't willing to put it on. You know, they don't like to be in long experiences. Yeah. So we're just trying to make it work for everyone possible, I guess. Cool. And another thing we found with the, like, there are things that are way better to do in VR when it comes to content creation, like actual level placement or anything requiring spatial placement and awareness. That is just, you could set up a level so much easier in VR than you can on a 2D window. But doing something like scripting is just a terrible process.
And before we move on to your Twitter profile, which we'll talk about, we'll explain why we said that. in terms of people building games and experiences in Modbox, is it going to have its own kind of marketplace where people are downloading these experiences, or how, what does it look like from a audience / game creator side?
It'll the plan right now is to heavily use the Steam Workshop. So it'll be, you just upload your creations or your mods. Creations are things made inside Modbox. Mods would be stuff you could make in the Modbox SDK, which is like actually programming. So like, if you wanted to make your own C# code to do really specific things, then you could use that. Ideally, you could, you know, everything could be done inside Modbox. But if you wanted to actually mod and create or take stuff from the Unity Asset Store and put it in Modbox, you could do that with the Modbox SDK and put it on the Steam Workshop. At the moment, the plan is for everything to just be on the Steam Workshop, so free and downloadable. I do like the idea of like a content creation marketplace, but I don't want to go into that. I don't want to like go into that and force it to happen. If there's good content that people want to buy, then maybe we could figure out a way to make that work. If content made in Modbox is so appealing that people want to buy it, then we'll look into that. But I don't want to assume that's the way that we're going to make money with Modbox. Because I think once you get into content creation and monetizing that, there's so much more problems and the community changes. And it's a different thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to force that just yet. I hope that will happen. But at the moment, the plan is still having Modbox as a paid either partially paid, or maybe we'll have some free version, but there'll definitely be some aspect of Modbox that players are just paying for, and the marketplace will remain free for a while.
Cool. Yeah, that's exciting. So one of the reasons why I think it's really awesome to talk to you is because you... Okay, so for the last, I guess, couple of months, every couple of weeks, we see a really interesting video that gets posted or that pops up on our Twitter feeds, and it involves you with either a Vive headset with some sort of like stereo pass-through headset doing a mixed reality experiment, and typically involves like a desktop display that's a magic window into a VR world, or it's like you meshing yourself with a Stereolabs headset. So for our audience listeners, we're going to have all of these videos and these clips that we're going to talk about linked in the description, and as well as it's going to be on our Twitter profile as well. So if you follow us there, you'll see all these clips retweeted by the time you're hearing this. So yeah, maybe Lee, you can kind of help walk us through some of what you're working on here, and maybe talk about some of the implications that you see that come from these experiments, because I really do think they're extremely unique, and there's a lot to learn. So let's start with the sorry.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, like, with context. Yeah, what happened pretty much is that I always envisioned Modbox as good for AR building. When you have we're trying to make an AR app, you have to really configure it to work in everyone's environment. And so the ways to do that are to have it procedurally sort of set up based on the environment. Or you could have it more that like Modbox, where you can actually configure it entirely based on your environment. Like I can position stuff and set it up specifically for my environment. So the first thing we did, the first idea I had that I wanted to explore was this idea of controlling the lights in my house inside Modbox in an AR environment. So you download Modbox, you'd connect it to your Hue lights with the API, and then you could configure in your creations made in Modbox to control the lights. So there's so many ideas I had to go along with how you could integrate lights in an AR app, but we just didn't have, there was no way to do that with an AR headset right now. And I specifically needed one that was easy to use, like with Steam VR. So when I saw this Zed Mini by Stereo Labs.
Yes, by Stereo Labs.
Yeah, which is an AR pass-through headset. That's the one right there. It's an AR pass-through headset, that AR pass-through camera. They attach it to your Vive headset, and then it feeds the image into your VR headset. There's a little bit of latency. It's not a perfect experience, but once you get used to it, it's great for VR prototyping. Like it's beyond anything a VR device can do right now in terms of it has great depth sensing. It's great mesh spatialization. It's fantastic for what it is. But as a consumer product, I don't think AR pass-through is going to be the thing that hits, because it's just not, it's not a pleasant experience.
Yeah, I think unless it's done by first party, and even I'm going to contradict myself because Vive Pro has a stereo pass-through camera, but even that has, like, I think, what is it, 50 to 100 milliseconds of latency?
Yeah, that sinks the frame rate.
No. So you can set up the frame rate up to 90, right? But it's still kind of...
The Zed Mini is better than the Vive. I have a Vive Pro, but I've yet to try their AR pass-through, which I really should. But the Zed Mini supposedly has like a much lower latency, but it's still, it needs to be absolutely perfect for AR pass-through to not feel motion sick. Also, it's just, there's no way for it to work perfectly, because the cameras on it are never going to be where your actual eyes are. So it doesn't matter how good the latency gets, doesn't matter if you pass through instantaneously, it's never going to feel like actual AR. But it's for actually just prototyping our ideas and what headsets could be once a headset comes out with like waveguides or something like that to actually do this properly, then it's a great idea for prototyping ideas and showing what could be, I guess.
So, okay, I'm going to push back on it a little bit, because I really do think there is a lot to the idea of pass-through AR being the stepping stone for AR, but not just for, 6 months, but perhaps for a few years. Having seen, tried a good amount of waveguide displays now and having access to a Magic Leap now as well, like, Waveguides have a lot of problems, and FOV is not even the main problem. Right? It's like, right. I'm talking about color. Just the fact that you have all these color weird issues, you don't have any true blacks, you have a lot of issues that come up with it that perhaps maybe pass through AR will act. If you, let's say we eliminate latency, right? And we have micro LEDs that can turn off subpixels down to, you know, black and all the way up to like 1,000 nits bright white. I think that could be a really, really compelling experience to have a very wide FOV, really color accurate display, and even doing like ambient light analysis of virtual things in the room and where the light source is in the real room is. I honestly, if I were to bet something on like what Apple is working on with their headset, I think it might be some sort of a pass through because the company they acquired, Vervana, was working on that. And anyway, so maybe you're right. Maybe it can't be done, but right. We'll see.
Well, it's just I don't think it's ever going to be consumer facing
exactly
AR. That's a really good thing. But I do think there's a lot of opportunities in showing the environment, but in an abstract sense. Like you could show the you could, you know, quickly render it and actually put it in VR, where you could do a lot of tricks that where you're still actually in VR, but it really accurately shows your environment in an abstract way. The ways that works is pretty terrible, but I think there's a lot of opportunities there. So I would love to play Modbox in my living room and fight drones, but not feel like I'm disconnected from the real world. And for that to happen, I don't think it necessarily needs to be like a direct video feed, but it does need to show where my walls are exactly. It needs to show when a person's walking up towards me. It can't just be the Guardian system. It's got to be a lot more advanced than that. So even in that way, I think the idea of an AR builder in my house with an abstracted sense has a lot of value. So that's where we see Modbox too, is like crafting things for your environment as you have more awareness of your environment going forward, as you know, these devices get better.
You know, it's funny you just say that, because last week we had Tippy Tat from the VR Fund on, and he was saying the exact same thing. He was like, if you want to build an AR app today, don't start with mobile AR. Start with building your app in VR with a Vive with 2 6 DOF controllers. And that will give you a much better, a closer representation of what AR should be like.
I don't really have a lot of interest in things without 6 DOF controllers. I like, one of the things I love most about VR is just interacting with physics. And there's just no way to do that with the current AR systems. They make good videos, but there's not a lot of actual game interaction that you can really have.
They do make good videos. It's when the whole portal is filled up with virtual things, and feels like it feels like what the video looks like, but the video is just as far out as you can see. So
with that,
I was going to say, what should we move up to, or what's the second step?
Well, with the Hue Lights video, the saga, it was specifically kind of showing how games can interact with lights in like your house lights. So in the video, I set up these, I'm controlling the lights with a color menu, like the color of them. But then I set up a little game where I put a bunch of blocks in the world. And then when I shoot them out with a bow and arrow, the light turns off as if I shot at that light. So this is setting it up in the game. Like I actually place those and I set up logic to be like, when this block breaks, turn off the light. I don't know if that's exactly how you would actually want to set it up in your house, but I can see it being like, so you're playing a game and you want every time to get hurt, the lights flash red. Or you want to actually do a fade into different environments, you fade the actual lights and have like a fade effect between scenes. There's just so many applications of something like that, but I see it as like you'd want to configure this exactly how you want this to work.
Yes, it's absolutely a really good idea. I think even for people that aren't playing the game, right? If you're a kid playing a certain game and then your parents are walking in, you also want their parents to have certain context of what they're doing. So maybe if one of the Hue lights is red to mean, you know, that's the lava environment that it's trying to avoid, or like, you know, like there's a lot that. Moving forward, if we're thinking everything in our rooms is going to be IoT or whatever connected, it does make sense to have it connect with the spatial games that we're playing and have it be responsive to both you as a user, but also other people to have context as to what you're doing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. important? I mean, how often do we, you know, bump into walls, or, you know, actually, how often do I need to avoid someone hitting me with a controller when I show them VR? It's a pretty common issue. And when we could, you know, what you described previously, somehow abstract the real world and fit it inside, you know, the virtual environment, we could be like really having those superpowers. You know, I point my hand at a light, it turns on and stuff. It's just really showing somehow exactly what we expect from augmented reality in a sense. Like, this is what everyone wants.
This is true spatial computing, and it's like deepest form.
Yeah, you do like, I do see it that you would need to set it up with your house. There's no way to just install a Hue and for it to spatially know where the hues are and things like that. So some sort of application like this is definitely going to be required for with actual spatial awareness and tracking of the environment completely.
I'll say one more thing before we move on is there are now TVs that it used to be, I think, Arduino boards that you had to kind of set up and put up LED lights behind your TV to do this like kind of color extension of what's being seen on the screen. I think now that's starting to become a feature with displays and desktops and monitors to kind of have your room be a part of, you know, your screen be a part of your room. Yes. So I think there's something to this idea moving forward, is having your lights be spatially connected with your spatial computing apps, whether it's a game or anything. Or imagine like seeing, you want to send a file from one computer to the next, or like from one phone to the next, like sending it and seeing the lights actually change the color as this file is going down the path of your room. Like something, I don't know, something silly like that.
Just connecting everything spatial awareness to all the Internet of Things devices.
Because honestly, programming this whole Internet of Things stuff, when you own it, is really a mess. Like, you always have to use some kind of third-party APIs, EFTTTs, and your Chrome stick cannot talk to Alexa, so you have to build some kind of server in between that you have to host yourselves, and you need to tell your Alexa to actually connect via Bluetooth to the phone, and then you need to set it up. And if you could actually go and point with your controller and click on it and, you know, set a timer, it's way easier than, you know, saying it out loud. I mean, you can still trigger commands and stuff, but a few things would be so way easier when you could just, you know, actually take like a virtual cord and, you know, put it between two objects and just, you know, then just say, being able to
say that one rather than have a name for it, like office to light. It's much, we want to be able to be, say, turn that light off and like literally point to it. This other video that posted I guess on this podcast, people can't really see the videos, right? But there's the next video. The next video that we posted that I tried out was the idea I wanted to show how you could actually set up games in the AR experience. So this doesn't really use a lot of AR specific ideas. It's more just showing how the interface would sort of work in a. So this is setting up something like Space Pirate Trainer, like a drone based game. And you can see that I'm using an edit mode to add objects to the level, and then I'm placing in weapons, and then I adding actual logic to the game, but that's in there also. So the drones are aware of you know, where the walls are. There's occlusion when they're moving down, just because the Zed Mini has can do mesh spatialization to actually figure out where the colliders are against the wall. I can't remember if I showed in this video or not, but one part of it that I really liked was actually it might be the next video. It's this one right there, where I show how I edit the game and I can actually change the AR world. Like, I can I use the grip controllers to scale the thing I'm working on. And I think this was hard to describe in the video, but it was really essential to craft AR things specifically for my environment. Like, if I want to, say, configure a light in my kitchen and like really detail how it looked or something without actually physically getting up and going there, I could just use the grip controllers to scale the environment, just like I do with a VR thing. But the essential thing was that I need to have awareness of what I'm editing. I need to show what it is that I'm changing. I think I'm gonna make a new video to describe this idea later, but at the moment I just show where my play area is. So you can see, like, on the video, I'm manipulating the environment and I'm scaling it, and I'm always showing where my player is just to give me a sense of reference. But I think I'm going to make a video showing the idea that once you scan your room, I could then manipulate my room and it could show me the scanned room, and I could edit the fine details and like scale around it with the grip without actually having to.
So a technical question.
Yeah.
So as far as I understand, if you would just rely purely on the Vive Pro, you would not have this mesh reconstruction, right?
No, it has that. From what I've seen, it has the mesh reconstruction, actually.
Ooh, so then you could actually be similar. Okay. Okay,
yeah,
interesting.
Like, you know, hopefully, like, the future VR headsets won't need a guardian system, because there's no reason to need to set up. The idea of setting up where your walls are, it should just be able to auto-detect that. So I think that's definitely going to be the thing going forward. All the, like, even the VR headsets, even without AR pass-through, should have that capability of scanning the environment and understanding it. So yeah, I'm hoping that I can demonstrate the idea of putting in the environment in and then showing how you can scale and manipulate that to edit it.
If I may, actually, this makes me think of maybe one way of really showing that would be starting with a scale at 1:1 so that the lights and have these triggers there, but then you scale it down so that everything comes to you to a chessboard size. Chessboard size, and then you manipulate certain things and then you zoom it back out to 1:1. And
yeah, that's exactly. I'm hoping to explore that idea soon. I think that's the next thing we're gonna try. But the hard part is just actually getting an understanding of a good frame of reference. Right now, all I show is like the play area, which is just like that cube thing. And then as you scale and rotate it, the play area changes. But it's just not enough to really understand what you're editing. You need like a full mesh of the room to really get it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're totally right. And I think with like seeing how Magic Leap does its meshing, it actually creates the mesh in Unity's just in as a, you know, game object in Unity, and then you can see exactly how things are lined up. Maybe if Stereolab does something similar, but
yeah, it's pretty much the same.
That is super cool, right? And I completely agree. I don't think Guardians will be a thing. Hopefully by second generation, every headset will have its own some sort of meshing capability.
I could argue for a Guardian system because it reminds you that you have walls, but that's the only positive.
But as a default, you shouldn't have to. It should just show you where things are, and it should be doing it very, like, you know, maybe 30 times a second, even, so that you see human beings walking into your place.
Absolutely.
Not like, you know.
Well, at the very least, if there is a setup period, you're not manually walking around with the controller. You just like look around, understand the environment, and then it knows where to stop you in VR.
Right.
Oh yeah, these are just I'm trying to make Modbox work and everything. So I did a few videos of exploring AR core with the menu system, but we have no plans to make a mobile AR version of Modbox anytime soon.
Why not?
Just the interface isn't there yet, and 6.0 controllers, and I'm waiting to see. I haven't tried that 6.AI startup, I guess. I haven't tried their stuff yet. But AR mobile AR is so limiting right now in that it doesn't remember environments. I can't do multiplayer. There's a lot of things that's missing, but that was when I checked it out a year ago. I haven't looked at the latest tools for that yet.
According to iOS 12, it does have both of those things, but
limitations for interaction, single stores area.
Right. I also really don't want to be an Apple developer, so I haven't owned an Apple product ever in my life, and I don't plan to, and I hope not to, but I imagine I'm going to have to for AR development. I'm hoping to just hire an Apple programmer and never actually have to deal with it. I've been following startups like that 6.AI company to see if they can do it on Android, and then I'll explore it then.
I think 6, is it 6D.AI?
Yeah, 6D.AI. That's it. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
We should They should be a potential next guest to talk about. Because, they have some pretty incredible meshing capabilities on mobile. So, should we talk about this video next?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, sure. This one, I can't remember where I got the inspiration to try this sort of stuff. I think I saw a video where someone did the ring, where the girl walked out of the screen or something like that using AR kit. Mm. You know, I don't actually put a lot of effort into these videos usually. Like, this is just like one night I had the idea to position the Unity camera where your monitor was. And then so you get a glimpse into the virtual world. And so I just tried it 15 minutes. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I should make a video. So I turned on the video record and I made this quick video to show the capabilities here. There wasn't a lot of direct applications I had in mind when I did this, but I think it's possible that there's a lot of cool games
so
you
many
can make
use
with
cases.
This idea. Yeah.
So many use cases, even outside of gaming, honestly. I mean, imagine you're doing your fine editing of your cut model on your nice, sharp screen.
Yes.
And then, you know, you just take it out of the screen with your, you know, Magic Leap or whatever. And the visual fidelity is not good, but at least you can see it in 3D.
Yeah.
And then you put it in the high fidelity screen.
The main thing that's required for this to work is the monitor needs to have, like, awareness of where it is spatially. And at this version that I had is not that good. This the one I made this first video on. The next video that I did of the same idea,
yes,
had a lot better understanding of, well, it had understanding of where the headset was, it tracked where the headset position was, and from that changed the perspective of the camera. And I used this tool mm-hmm. called the picture window to do that. And I think what that is the way that it would work.
Guess who made it? Guess who made it? It's Deprecated Coder, one of like our OG listeners of this podcast.
Ooh.
And yeah, he hangs out with us in our meetups a lot.
Yeah, it is a fantastic tool. Yeah, it's really well done when I tried it out. I think I'm going to integrate it more into Modbox and actually make it a feature that players can check out. But now that that virtual window, the way that it works now is that the virtual window tracks the head and changes the perspective of the head. So it's completely accurate what the screen shows of what it should show there. Before it was, it gave a cool effect, but it wasn't, it was very flat. And there was no way to represent what the camera should see on a flat screen like that.
Let me just take a second to explain to our listeners here, like what we're looking at. So, Deprecated Coder made an app, or I guess a tool for Unity, where your desktop monitor can become a virtual mirror, just a mirror into your VR space. So, depending on where your headset is, when you look left and right, that virtual monitor, that monitor that you have becomes a holographic display into your virtual world. So the video that we're looking at here is Lee throwing balls at, like, virtual balls with his Vive controller into his monitor, and it goes into his monitor, and then he peeks around his monitor to look behind it, and he sees the virtual ball kind of keep going through it. So it's a very interesting blend of, like, mixed reality with already existing displays, and I really like, I think these sort of interactions are going to be the bread and butter of like this next spatial computing thing that we're moving past. Like, it's so magical looking at it, you know, how could it not be?
I don't show the setup period for this, but Picture Window actually has a really great setup process that Ryan created, because the initial video I did before was that I actually just manually set the Unity camera to be where I thought the controller was. And it was a very manual process of, like, slowly adjusting it. But with this, what you do is that with the Vive controller, you say, this is the top left edge of the window, here's the bottom right of the window. And then that completely knows how to set it up after that. It's a really smooth process. I'm hoping to integrate it into Modbox. I'm not sure what the appeal would be for people who don't have the AR pass-through, but I think it would still...
Right.
It's a very cool idea. Like, I could see it being that, you know, people watching you play the game, they have an idea of what you're looking into, I guess. But we'll see, I guess.
We'll see.
Part of the idea of just giving it spatial awareness. You're, like, telling the monitor where it is, and then from that, you add all these capabilities. I'd love to do the same experiment with a monitor that I can move, sort of tracked with a Vive tracker. But I have a lot of things to do, so I haven't done that yet.
I mean, I feel like that would be an iPad with AR kit, right? Like, tracking monitor that doesn't even need a secondary tracker.
That's part of the reason why I quickly made a Modbox AR experiment with AR Core, was I wanted to try that idea of it being a sort of a virtual window into someone in VR. The other thing to do that right would be to share the same, it just needs to have the same spatial, what's the word for that? Just
coordinates.
Spatial coordinates, I guess. Yeah. I think that's definitely possible. It would work, just you'd have to network the game, but so, because it would actually be running on that other machine. But it has some cool applications.
Yeah. And just as an aside, I guess, We've talked about holographic and like light field displays that aren't here yet, but perhaps might be in the near future. I can see that being a really nice window for people to be able to see, like peek into these AR and VR worlds, and for you to be able to interact with them the same way that you are here, but for also for non-headset users to fully understand what's going on by having a real parallax display. So maybe we'll come back to this in a few years and be like, wow, like so ahead of time, you know, like thinking about this. Yeah, I mean, I think so. But
I mean, there actually was at some point this experiment from Microsoft Research Lab, I think, where they installed few projectors. And they projected actually the virtual world with the projectors on top of the real world. And when you would move around, it somehow tracked you. It was like a super complex setup. But then you would kind of use the real rooms that they map basically with the projectors, the virtual room on top to see characters and stuff. And I think it was like the first, you know, the first trials. Now we see it more sophisticated because honestly, like when I see the videos that you posted, I'm like, yeah, I want to use it daily. I don't care if it lags. Like, I really have use cases for it because this is exactly what I expect from, you know, my device. This is exactly how I expect, you know, machines, computers, and this whole spatial stuff to interact, because it's not about, yelling at some device in the end of the room. It's not about, you know, taking a phone and looking at the small screen where I observe something in the real world. I mean, what's the point? Like, the point is that I want exactly that. And even if it's laggy and stuff, I don't care for the next few years. I mean, I expect, you know, at some point we might have digital lenses or digital eyes or whatever. But like, this is exactly what I think everyone deep down after watching so many sci-fi movies wants. This is like the dreams that we are all having, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, AR is definitely the thing that's
tying everything together.
It's the fun thing to experiment with, definitely.
And this is how technology should be. I mean, you have also this video where you have a person that is doing multiplayer with you, right? Where she's basically a character, but next to her, and then you're fighting the virtual character. And I mean, it could be also some kind of training for combat or, you know, training for whatever. Like, there's so many cases you could do exactly that. Or even when you go totally nuts, you know, you're in your virtual room, and then you actually let someone come in your meshed scan, and then they see your room, and you are an avatar in your room, and you see them as an avatar in their room. Even that could possibly be right.
Yeah, there it is. That one, yeah.
Yes.
This was the kind of show, like, she was actually in VR, so she sees a VR environment in this video. And then I'm seeing her in my AR space. So it's offset a little bit, just so it's a different character. But the idea was that you'd be playing with people in AR, like she could be in another environment completely would be the ideal scenario, and she'd be located in your room and playing with her, and you could have different scales. There wasn't really like the multiplayer was really just what's being shown off here, and I do think that's gonna I mean, there's already people doing that with the Magic Leap doing AR to AR multiplayer pretty successfully. And to VR, yeah. So I think, like, maybe it's the case that someone with a Vive headset could connect to someone with the next-gen Magic Leap and connect and just talk through there.
Anything that's doing that yet? That's, like, connecting different tracking system, like, different coordinate systems with different tracking systems and different headsets, having some sort of a shared space?
Not really that I know of. Like, I think when we looked into using Magic Leap and the Vive, we would definitely have to do some work to make sure they had this same coordinate space. Like, you could definitely have it so someone in another room entirely is using a Magic Leap and you're connecting to it with the Vive. I haven't seen someone do that yet, but I think I could do that with Modbox in like a day, probably, just because the running on Android. But, I think the problem is trying to connect it to the same coordinate system. It's not going to be an automatic process yet. The way I would do it now is just hook up a Vive tracker to the Magic Leap.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that might be a good first step. And I think this might be our final clip that we'll talk about is actually this ties back in with our episode with Aldous from IBM. Who does a lot of research. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what we're seeing here?
Well, I read this module. I think Leap Motion had a post where they talked about showing ping pong with their AR headset, that Project North Star. And they had one brief sentence where they said, like, well, maybe someone could train in AR to be better at ping pong because you could do stuff like show trajectory and stuff of the ping pong ball. Or maybe it was training. Yeah, it was training entirely AR. So the ping pong ball in the example wasn't a real ping pong ball, but it was just an AR experience. But based on that, they mentioned that because it's all virtual, you could show all the trajectories of the ping pong ball and actually get better at ping pong. So I really love the idea of displaying information to the user to give them the player to give them sort of superhuman abilities, and then to just based on tracking the real world and doing calculations on it. So I wasn't sure how I was going to do that first. Like I initially thought, okay, ping pong ball. I'll have to track the ping pong ball. So when you're looking at it, I'll have to use I have to understand how the velocity of the ping pong ball. I have to like virtually create it and virtually simulate it and look up trajectory math and all that stuff. And it got really complicated, so I didn't do it. But then when I realized that I could just use the Vive controller, which is perfectly tracked and knowing position and velocity. And then I also realized that rather than having to simulate this myself, like figure out the actual physics, I could just run the Unity physics system. So like there's a way to run Unity physics sort of ahead of time where you can be like after you set up the rigid body and the positions and everything, you could just run it all in one frame 3 seconds ahead of time and then get the results from all of those collisions. So based on that, we added a rigid body to the controller. So it always has a controller and then it's a collision mesh. And then we just run the simulation 3 seconds of what should happen to it based on its current velocity and position. So it does collide with walls, and it shows you the trajectory right now. And so I really like...
I love that. I love that the trajectory bounces off your desk into wall, and like it's and that's all based on the Stereolabs camera, right?
Yeah, like the collision is actually found by the Stereolabs. It's not updated in real time, but it's just something that was pre-scanned, the collision in my room. The bouncing of the controller is a little bit... It's not realistic right now, because when it did actually have realistic physics values for the bouncing, it was pretty boring. Like throwing it against the wall, which naturally happened, it should barely bounce at the wall, then just slide down. And that didn't give us as good of visuals to say that this was physically bouncing as if I just upped the bouncing of it.
You should really totally actually get like off one of those Vive controllers. Vive trackers and actually build this cage that we discussed in the IBM episode and make it bounce. So take some kind of 3D material that is a little bit flexible and put the tracker in it so it's kind of protected but still has enough thing, and then you can actually do this bouncing ball stuff. Just don't break
it. I think that's more something for an actual research center rather than my half an hour Twitter videos.
Sure.
But one thing about the video that we made here is that it doesn't display the information good enough to actually be better than sort of what your brain can do right now. Like it shows you the trajectory, but that's not really that helpful in seeing the complete trajectory. And you actually have to put some time to your brain has to like figure it out that that's what the information is conveying. Like right now, I'd have an easier time catching the controller if someone threw it at me without this than with this. It takes some time for my brain to understand and to process that and understand it's helping me. But just recently, I made a new version of this where it just shows you the where it's going to land closest to your hand.
Was the pillows? The video was the pillows, right?
Oh no, I haven't actually done this. This pillow is just to show what happens when you actually throw it to compare the.
Oh, okay.
The simulated trajectory to the real one, and it is very accurate when you're throwing it. But the new video the new thing that I want to try that I haven't really finished yet is that that I've done some experiments on, it definitely works, is that it rather than show the complete trajectory in the path, it just shows you its position when it reaches the height of your hand. And then so how that's different is it just shows you a single position and then it's constantly updated where that position is. So like say you threw a ball at me and when it lands close to my hand, it would show a green display of like where that ball is going to be when it reaches my hand height. And that's constantly updated every frame. So it gets more and more accurate as the ball gets closer. Because like there's always, air resistance or things that are not actually physically simulated properly. So that constant updating makes it very accurate and actually helps. Like I could have someone throw the controller behind my back and then catch it perfectly just based on... seeing where like at what height it'll land. So I'm excited to try that out and show that video, because I do feel like that's actually a superhuman ability, I guess.
Yeah, please don't break the controllers.
I think I need to see it. I don't know if I'm understanding it through auditory.
So imagine you throw something behind your back, so someone's standing behind you and he's throwing a controller over your head, as far as I understood, and you're catching it. And then while someone's throwing it, you already see where it's going to land and you can like put your hand in front of you and catch it.
Yeah.
How's that different than the trajectory that you're already showing?
Because right now the trajectory is only calculated when it leaves my hand. And it shows the complete path, and so that's just calculated once. A better way to do it is to show exactly where it'll land and then constantly recalculate where that landing is. So like the way that I do that right now is based on your hand position, like the height of your hand. So it shows you this is where it'll land close to your hand. So you better move your hand there rather than the complete path.
So just the initial and final positions kind of so that you're putting your hand to where that final position should be.
Exactly. It just shows you the final position rather than the complete path, because you really don't care about the path it gets. You just want to know where you should move your hand to catch it. I think I need to change how I describe it before I post that idea, I guess.
I think I heard the thing that threw me off was you were talking about the height, and I was thinking like the height of the parabola of your throw. Kind of right in the middle rather at the end. But I guess that's...
Well, I meant the height off the ground. Like... The way it works is that it calculates it, and then it says calculate it to the point of when it hits that height position, which is where your hand is, and then display that. So yeah, maybe I'll just have to change how I talk about that.
Dude, you're totally right, though. It is, and this we talked about this for like 2.5 years. VR and AR gives superpowers to human beings,
right?
And these are the ways that we're starting to see that happen. And it starts with, you know, enterprise wanting to train their athletes, you know, 1%, 5% better than what they could today. But that comes down and starts going into consumer applications very, very quickly. So yeah, it's really cool to see these experiments happen. And even, you know, even if you're discounting them as just Twitter videos, I think these Twitter videos are how inspirations happen. And this is how people get ideas. I mean, you said it yourself. You saw the Leap Motion, the video that they posted about the ping pong ball. And you're like, maybe there's something more to it there. So I think this is super, super important to...
Yes.
To get people to start thinking about what are the different and weird applications of these headsets that go way beyond what is just initially marketed.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like that's sort of the inspiration. It's just, you know, showing ideas. So I have a notebook with like a bunch of weird AR ideas. Then every week or so, I spend an hour trying it, and then a lot of the time they fail horribly. and then sometimes they work out. They just quickly work out. So like just recently I was trying to have one where I wanted to have something where I could scan, say my chair, and then it turns into a physical object and drops down. Or like I wanted to scan something and then have it, the physics of it turn on and for it to drop down and to be able to interact with that physics, like that clone of it. Just setting fine details up with the mesh spatialization just isn't there yet. So I'm going to keep trying that, but it was a failed experiment, I guess. Mesh specialization is really great now for scanning environments, but for scanning fine details and small objects, it's not there yet.
Yeah, it's really an unsolved problem so far.
Yeah, I should mention, I saw something really promising.
The clone, the AR thing.
Well. Yeah.
I saw that too.
What was that? It's, wait, I got to find it.
No, I'm thrilled.
Give me a second.
I think that used 60 AI, actually, that I saw.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
You mean where you scan a person and then you get the whole movement of that person?
No, it was that you can scan objects and you can actually send them on iMessage to another person. I don't know. Sorry, it was only like this week, I think, that they...
Yeah,
at least it.
I mean, since 1, 2, 3D catch is done, and I haven't found any tools that could do it, like on iPhone, for example, quickly.
Yeah, it seemed like they were using like ARKit for to do the actual scanning, and then you could copy and paste the what you just scanned in that same AR environment, and then you can even send that object through iMessage like the 3D object itself through iMessage.
I'm really looking forward to when, you know, the iPhone can finally scan objects, because, or like any phone, like any phone. I mean, it's not about the iPhone, but the camera qualities are so good, particularly, you know, in the near distance, you have so much detail. You just need some kind of crazy performance leap, or maybe some specially designed AI chips on the SoC to, you know, do it way quicker and way better.
It'll have to be. I mean, the fact that we need, there is a huge necessity to map your space just so that you don't bump into things, means we, it's like a, it's a byproduct to be able to 3D scan something and actually have the mesh of that, you know, a textured colored mesh of that object. So it's like these needs are growing together, and then there's like one solution that can fit both.
Right.
Oh, it's the same solution that also drones need, right? To like figure out where they are in space. And like, it's so cool to just see all these things growing together. And creative artists kind of trying to figure out where they can make those connections.
I mean, as much as I hate buzzwords, augmented reality cloud, or like, you know, augmented cloud, as you know, a lot of companies recently talk about, makes somehow sense, because that's exactly what they have in mind, a way to map the world.
One thing that I wish AR companies would embrace more is just like not trying to do the dream all at once. Like the dream is an AR headset that you can walk around. You can walk around everywhere, and you have track controllers, and you don't need a computer and everything like that. I would just like, all I need is a AR headset where I can do experiments like this in my room, hooked up to my computer, easily be able to iterate on ideas. And that could be the first generation, and that could be where we had to start. We discover the apps, we discover what the use case is, and then from that get to the point of walk everywhere VR. So, like, I find experimenting with Steam VR to be by far the best, because it has the most accurate tracking, and there's no inside out system that has nearly the same accuracy when it comes to the tracking. So something like that,
absolutely,
controlling the predicting the physics of that object, the AR video, that just wouldn't be. That just wouldn't be possible yet. And so it's good to experiment with the best system that we have, just Steam VR tracking, before when we know that thing's going to be possible later on. When it comes to like, when they can actually do it entirely inside out and just with visuals.
Have you tried the Meta 2 at all, or any of the other, you know, headsets, Magic Leap, HoloLens?
I've really only tried the HoloLens, and I tried it briefly.
You should try the Meta 2.
Yeah, I've heard that has Steam tracking, I guess, right?
Yes, but the good part is it's teasered, so you can connect it to your PC. You can still use a Vive system for tracking, because it will be superior, but then you have like a decent quality of image compared to, let's say, a HoloLens or whatever.
Yeah, I might go down that path. Where at the moment we're focused on getting Modbox ready for desktop players. AR experiments are just experiments. We don't have a plan to release any AR version of Modbox as a commercial product for a while until the headset.
Oh man, that's sad.
Sure. Well, Lee, now that everyone's heard so much about this, how can people find you on Twitter, and how can people find out more about Modbox?
My Twitter is AlienTrap, just one word. And in terms of following Modbox, we hope to be announcing stuff soon, I guess. And I'll be announcing on my Twitter and showing the capabilities of the thing that we've been working on for about a year, which I don't think we've shown enough of, I guess.
Awesome. And for everyone, yes, all the links of these videos will be in the description, and his Twitter profile will be as well. And you can follow us at ResearchVR, at ResearchVRcast on Twitter, and you can find us on Discord as well. And if you like listening to these episodes and you like the conversations that we're having, and you want us to keep having these conversations, and for us to be able to pay for the electricity that is powering these headsets, please consider supporting us on Patreon. It would be pretty, pretty incredible. I'll do the outro after this. And what else should I include in here?
Like 5 stars review.
Oh, yes. And if... And if you can't contribute to our Patreon, it would be incredible if you could even just leave us a review on iTunes. I think that would really help us. That would really help us with our rankings, and it would help us just get the word out more. And if you have any other people that are interested in these conversations, you know, that are interested in designing and developing in VR, that want to learn from the masters, you know, the people that have been doing this for years, please recommend them this podcast and let them know what's going on in here. So that should be all for now. Probably next week we might have our Magic Leap like impressions and review thing. I haven't really talked about it much on public because I want it to kind of settle in my own head, and I want to see I don't want to put out rash opinions before. Not that there are any rash opinions, but there's definitely some thoughts. There's definitely thoughts that I want to share, specifically when it comes to the display itself. I think that's going to be the thing that I'll concentrate on the most. That's the thing that I'm interested in the most, especially being like a cinematographer that wants a very good display to work on. And I see HMDs really being the step forward for display technology. Like, if you can convince anyone to buy a headset because it's going to be the most high resolution, best, most color accurate display that they can buy in their house for gaming, for video, I see that as going to be a big selling point, and I want it, but we don't have it yet. But all right. So thank you, Lee, again for joining us. This has been a really fun episode, and I'll see you guys next time.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Thanks. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye. Goodbye.